for April 13th, 2013. This is not an episode. This is a special episode. So we're not going to give it a number because we decided we were going to have a spoilerific episode all about BioShock Infinite. Something we've never done here on Lazy Lee.
That's right.
All three of us, Kim, Stephanie, and myself, have finished the game. And we just decided to break this out because we wanted to talk about it during the episode.
Dying to talk about it.
So if you have not played or finished BioShock Infinite, please stop this recording now. Please stop. I beg you, stop. Stop. But if you have and you're just like, oh, I don't want to leave this world and I want to talk about it more, then this is the podcast for you because we're going to dive in deep. I personally played through it twice. On hard mode the second time. I did the 1999 mode. And I've never done this before. I've never played a game another time through. It was just so awesome. I just loved it so much. I wanted to go back to that world. So Stephanie, I'm assuming you also played it through on 1999 mode because you're awesome like that.
Yeah, I haven't finished it on 1999, but that's I'm in the middle of it right now. So.
And then Kim, you've finished.
Super cool.
I finished and I started it on 1999 mode.
See,
as well.
There you go. Yeah. Oh, let's explain what that is.
Yeah, so I was going to say, why did they call it?
Once you finish the game on any level difficulty, easy, medium, or hard, then you unlock 1999 mode, which is hard mode with some caveats.
Yeah.
Every time that you die, you lose a certain percentage of money. When you run out
it's
of money,
it's about 100 gold.
You do not res.
It's like 100 gold. Right. 100 silver, whether. Those silver coins, but there were times it was 100, and then I know sometimes it was 50. So
I think it's a percentage of how much money you have. That's my theory.
Really?
Okay. But anyway, if you run out of money, you don't res.
It's done.
Game over.
I was so strategic in what I purchased in the bigger shop and stuff like that. Yeah,
and the first time I saw the fireman, I was like panicking because you have the worst gun at the beginning, and I'm like, don't kill me. I was sweating bullets there for a while playing that game, and the navigation is turned off. You don't get arrow telling you
but I still don't understand why they call it 1999 mode, because
it does have a history
because
of that.
When you go into the future, because you do go into the future, you see 1984. So
yeah, no, it's not tied into the game.
It's just
that phrase. It's not tied into the game story itself.
Did you finish it on 1999 mode?
Yes,
Nicole did.
Wow.
That's
pretty. I mean, not saying I played this through on normal or medium the first time, and it really wasn't that hard.
Right.
You know, so playing it this way, I think. Would be more fun, you know. I've enjoyed it so far. I mean, you've got reduced player respawn points, not as much ammo. I mean, you got to really
everything.
Think about it.
I will say that I thought at first the lockpicks were a few. You know, I was running out because I remember having on the first time through, but by the end, I scavenge everything. I had 30.
No, absolutely.
Which is 30 is your max. So I was able
at the beginning, you're holding on to them like they're precious. And then towards the end, you have like a ton. My precious. So 1999 mode is named after the year that they released System Shock.
Okay.
The studio released System Shock. So that's what it's in reference to. It's not about the BioShock storyline.
Gotcha.
Not
Prince.
Not the System Shock.
Prince isn't singing about 1999.
Hello.
You can't help but think of Prince. Huh?
Yeah, right?
I'm so excited that we're doing a spoiler episode because after I finished this, it was probably 11:30 at night, and I ended up spending a good hour in bed just searching on the forums. Because should we just get to the heart of the big reveal?
Let's do it.
Okay, so
let's do it.
You of course you realize that. So you're playing Booker DeWitt, and then you realize because the name of the game is BioShock Infinite, there are infinite number of worlds, and in other worlds, you become Comstock.
But again, this is part of the genius of this game. Are there actually infinite worlds, or are there infinite combinations just a few worlds? You know, it's
so
you just don't know.
Well, and I've read so many things where the way little hints that Elizabeth says, she says, I don't know if it's a way of wish fulfillment. So is it infinite number of worlds that she's pulling from? And because of, you know, who she is, because she is Anna. And there's a scene that when they're going to get Lady Comstock's ship, and the girl goes, Annabella? And I didn't notice it the first time through, but I did notice it the second time through. And
through, you pick up all these different clues, and you're like, how did I miss this the first time through? That they were throwing all these clues at us, and we completely didn't get it. So I'm going to back up and just start with what the whole story was about.
Yes.
Because you start as Booker DeWitt, who's been hired to rescue Elizabeth
by two strangers, right?
The two bickering people, the guy and the girl, who keep showing up everywhere. And then eventually you learn that they are Latisse and her brother I call it her brother. They're like twins, right?
They're the same person.
They are the same person.
One
in but one alternate.
One of them is dead. Well, they're both dead, technically.
Yeah, they're both dead.
But and now they just kind of exist throughout the
Because they
universe.
Were able to transcend, I think, in that space, because they kind of understood it. I mean, she created it in her world.
Yes, she creates Columbia. She creates the ability for the city to float and, whatever. But she also, through Comstock's prophecy, builds the device that opens tears. Mm-hmm. And when she opens the tears is when they go through to get the child. Mm-hmm. That's part of his prophecy, which happens to be Booker DeWitt's child, Anna. His wife is dead. He's got his child. He's a gambler. He gives up his child with the concession that they're not going to hurt
whole,
her.
Like twisted and, past, right?
Yeah. So here's where it gets tricky. Is, and Latisse says this at the beginning, she's wondering why Elizabeth is the way she is. And she says, I think it's because part of her doesn't exist in this world. And the universe doesn't like its peas mixed in with its whatever,
porridge.
Carrots or something.
Yeah, peas and porridge.
It doesn't like this. So what happened is, as the Latisses are taking, and Comstock, are taking the baby through the tear, her pinky gets caught in the closing hole, which is why the Elizabeth that we see has no pinky.
That tore me up, by the way. That
pinky
scene.
Is left in the world that she was taken from. And now the grown-up Elizabeth has the ability to open the tears when she finds them.
So what if,
and
if DeWitt
walk
would have
through
just,
the world.
What if DeWitt would have brought that pinky with him?
Yeah, I don't think it was a... here's one of the interesting things that you see when you replay the game. So the whole reason that Booker is brought in is because Latisse does not like what has happened. She doesn't like what they've done to Elizabeth. She doesn't like what's going on, and she wants to undo it.
The male doesn't like it. The woman, the female version of Latisse, she doesn't really care.
She doesn't really care.
She thinks what's set in motion is set in motion. But the male version of her says, if you don't fix this, I'm leaving. And so she reluctantly agrees to try to right what they've done wrong. And that's why they bring DeWitt into their world. And he, his brain adjusts as they are, adapts as she says. So
one of the first times that they meet is the coin toss. Right, so the male version it has like a sandwich board.
Mm-hmm. Did you count them?
And yes, 122.
Yes,
was the flipping. That means they have attempted this 122 times.
Yes,
and he has failed.
Yep.
And this is their 121, and this is their 122nd attempt to right the wrong. And the wrong, of course, is that Booker DeWitt is Comstock.
Right.
When he was baptized after serving in the military,
a wounded knee.
He became Comstock. So you're essentially, it's kind of like going back in time and killing your grandfather, that kind of thing. He's kind of doing that, only in reverse. He's going into the future to try and undo this. And I still don't know where the prophecy part comes from.
Yeah, like where did he get that?
They never really explained, because he had the prophecy well before the city was built. That was part of his prophecy, that he saw this floating city and blah, 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 blah. But where did the prophecies come from? I don't know. They weren't part of the Latisse's plan. They came to him from whatever.
And we should say the reason why they go to get the child is because of all the work Comstock's doing with Latisse in this quantum, whatever they're calling it, he becomes sterile and it advances his age. And I remember you even saying in the episode last time, you're like, it doesn't match up. The dates doesn't match up.
We talked about it before the recording. Yeah. Okay. So in the loading screen, you can see our Booker DeWitt's birth date is 1874. And while you're playing the game, you go through that Wounded Knee Boxing Day diorama, and there's a timeline of the prophet, mm-hmm. and it starts 1874. That's exactly when it starts.
You're like, why is he the prophet so old?
And I was like, why is it the same year? This doesn't make any sense. Now it makes sense, of course, because he was essentially born, reborn.
And then
go ahead, go Kim.
Did any of that really click while you were playing, though, or was it? Did it all just click when at the end?
I mean, it clicked at the end.
Okay, yeah.
Because I kept looking at him, going, "They can't be the same person because he's so much older. Yeah. It couldn't possibly be."
Well, I think what was awesome about the reveal was that it kept building little things on top of where you're like, "Did the developers make a mistake? Why in the world did they put a Beach Boys song?" It clearly is not in 1912. And then you start hearing things like Shiny Happy People. And then you hear On a Carousel, Girls Everybody Just Want to Have Fun. I mean.
Yes.
And then.
And they get the explanation that through the tears, these people have been exposed to music from our future.
Well, Fink's brother took it upon himself to monetize that and grab the songs and then turn them into music for that day and age. Mm. So the covers that they do of these very modern songs, in some cases I prefer, like you were saying, Everybody Wants to Rule the World. I love that version so much jazzy. More than the Tears for Fears version. And Scott had a listener send him all of the music. He went into the game and recorded it all.
And I found them on YouTube.
Yeah.
Like people have taken them out of the game and put them in there. They're brilliant. I love them.
I'll send them to you if you're interested. But all I've been doing is listening to the, because I wanted the soundtrack. So I ended up, because I had the PC version, I ended up buying the PS3 version, the premium edition, just so I could get the soundtrack. Because I thought I thought the covers were gonna be in there. And guess what? They're not. It's just
bits of the
I was so TO'd. TO'd. But I'm gonna give the game to my brother on the PS3. But
awesome.
Yeah. But I'm really happy that I have the covers now. But I love that it all just kind of adds to the layers. I mean, this is a very layered type of game.
I mean, and so many of the things, because if you look at the coin tosses, every time she throws a coin to Booker, it's
tails.
Yeah. But at the beginning, when they did it, there was a heads. And then his nose bleeds.
Yeah.
Yes.
During it. And
the nosebleed being the signal that he's out of sync.
Yeah.
He has many, which I didn't really even add that together in the first playthrough. On the second playthrough, on the first playthrough, it was heads. But on the second, on the 1999 mode, I'm pretty sure for my playthrough, it was tails.
I don't recall them actually showing it. Well, they just kind of said, huh, and then walked away. I was like, but you didn't even say what
it
was.
They said it in my playthrough, it was tails. And I thought it was kind of odd. Because I was like, oh, cool, I get a little tick on the side that doesn't have anything.
No, you don't get that.
And the other thing about kind of how you're meant to connect we were talking last episode about some of the choices that you have. So because I wanted to see what the opposite, like what happened when you chose the other option. Right. So like, for instance, the first, one of the first scenes where you get a choice, you have a baseball and you can throw it at Fink, yeah, or you can throw it at the couple. Well, the first time there's no way, right, I'm throwing it at the couple. I'm throwing it at Fink.
No way.
So later on you meet up with the couple and they give you a piece of gear. If you throw the baseball at the couple, they're not there, but Fink sends one of his guys that said he likes you and he wants to hire you, and you get the piece of gear from that guy. So you're going to get the piece of gear no matter what. It just depends on the choice. Right. And then, of course, when later, like the very end, you realize the symbol of the necklace that you picked for Elizabeth, because you either pick a bird or a cage, and neither one has a significance. It's the fact that you, as the player, picked that, and so you can, right, identify Elizabeth as your Elizabeth, and that really matters in that storyline, because you're with her the entire time until the very end, and she's not there. And it even says, "Wait, who are you?" And you realize that your Elizabeth isn't in that particular
ending.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So where did she go?
So there was a this BioShock, as opposed to 1 and 2, did not have an alternate ending based on the choices that you made. The previous 1s and 2, if you chose to harvest the little sisters, or you made certain choices about killing other NPCs characters, you got a different ending. That's not the case here. Those choices were minor and did not affect the ending.
And I don't, I think that's okay. You know, I mean.
Oh, I'm fine with that, because this ending blew my mind.
Yeah. I mean, quite frankly. I don't think we couldn't have had a different ending, you know, with the way they set this up.
Yeah. Because they tied it all together. And then you start getting into some of the analysis, like you were saying, Stephanie, about BioShock 1 and 2. And because DeWitt was able to operate, because you get taken to Rapture. And because you can,
which was one of my favorite parts. I was like squealing. Like I wanted,
did you explore it? Did you explore? I was hoping, I'm like hitting trash cans. I'm like, oh, please just give me something hidden in here. Where is there like a little audio play tape to pick up? I wanted something.
You know, I was so blown away at that time. I didn't do anything. I was just like, oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God.
Did she say, would you kindly? I didn't hear her say that. I read somewhere that she had said that, but my second playthrough, I didn't hear her say to DeWitt, would you kindly? It would have been a cool kind of Easter egg.
So one of the things that people were talking about was, so, you know, you have like the stacks of health and stacks of salts and things that you can bring in. Mm-hmm. But so do you guys think she's bringing that in through a tear, or you're going to the different world to get that equipment?
Do you mean like the tech that from Rapture?
And you know, like when you're on the boat, let's say, and you're in that final battle, and you've got all these different things that you can have her materialize. You know, you've got the health packs or the salts or the the covers. Yeah, you think that she's pulling them through?
Yeah.
We're going to that world that has that object in it.
No, I think that would be, he would probably be unconscious if we went through that many that quickly. I mean, because he was bleeding just from the couple times that we went through. Yeah, I think he'd be unconscious if we kept flipping through the number of times that I was going, trigger that.
Yeah, because she was able to be very specific. And then when she wanted to do the big tears, that's when he would have like the nosebleed and things like that. So I do recall reading about Fink going back to Rapture, and that's why they have the Vigors and the Songbird, because if you think about it, you have Handyman and you have Songbird. Both of them have features or similarities to the Big Daddy. So if you read, if you listen to the Voxophone, and there's a board with Songbird all laid out, it's like they took the Big Daddy technology, and I think there's even a Voxophone of Fink talking about getting to patent, you know, get the patents for the technology. So it's mm-hmm. it's like they've stole it from Rapture, which was in the 60s, right? And they've taken it to the 1912. So Fink can keep and, I guess, get money from that technology as the years go through. But that's how Songbird and the handyman. I hated those damn handymen.
Yeah, they were horrible. But, I mean, if you extend that out, Elizabeth looks like the little sisters.
Exactly.
If Songbird is the big daddy, Elizabeth looks like, and she's completely dressed like in mm-hmm. her first outfit,
yes.
the white and the blue, she looks exactly like the little sisters. So you had the Songbird as big daddy and Elizabeth as the little sisters. But I am still not convinced about this flip on the ending that somehow Booker is tied to Ryan.
But he has
Andrew
to be.
Ryan.
Because the only Ryan can operate the what are they called? The blophosphere? Bluff? I don't know how you...
Bathosphere.
Bathosphere.
It's a bathosphere. No, because I am not convinced that what we were seeing was in actuality Rapture. Because when we got to the quote-unquote surface, that's when we saw all the other lighthouses. Mm. I think at that point we were in some kind of portal, some kind of hub, if you will. The fact that she could pull those and make them all visible, all those lighthouses that were, to her description, alternate versions of us.
Right.
And we could actually see ourselves walking around, you know, hey, that's another Booker. Hey, that's another Elizabeth. I thought as soon as she... you know, said goodbye to Songbird, which was actually more tragic than I was
so
expecting.
Sad.
That it was her.
Stephanie. Hello.
I think the BioShock gods are like, just screw that. No, that's wrong.
I think we lost Stephanie. She's not here, so I'm going to disagree with her.
I totally
think we were in Rapture. There was a big daddy and a little sister across the way. I mean, it was completely, how would it not be Rapture?
I think so too. There, I don't see any reason why it wouldn't have been Rapture. And I mean, I agree. There was a New York.
Exactly.
You know, why couldn't there be a Rapture? You know, so yeah, I disagree with that too.
So was there
oh,
any?
Sorry,
there,
I got disconnected.
Yeah.
We just disagreed with you.
Okay. No. Here's why. Okay. Right. So I am going by the history that I know from BioShock 1 and 2, which is that it was our universe. It is the history that we know, which is. World War II started in the 30s and 40s. This was the impetus for Andrew Ryan to start Rapture. He was afraid of communists, blah, 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 blah. That was a traditional background. And then once they got to Rapture, you know, everything went crazy. This history is nothing like that. I mean, you had a floating city in 1903 that went around and bombed the Boxing Day Chinese. That is not our history. And Andrew Ryan would have flipped his wig if he found out about a floating city. I'm sure he would have gone there before building a city underground.
But they can exist separately. So
not
there's
really.
Constants. There's constants and variables, and that's what they were saying. The constants is there's always a light.
What is the constant?
There's always a lighthouse. There's always a girl. And there's always a guy or a man or something
okay,
like that. Those
so
are the
how,
three.
How do you explain
I think that was
them actually how do you explain the Booker is Andrew Ryan? How do you explain that?
No.
I'm not saying they're not. I'm not saying they're the same person. I'm saying that they're somehow connected, whether it's his like grandfather or somehow they're related. They have to have the same DNA. Just like when you played Jack in the first one, it wasn't you were Jack Ryan or Ryan. What was his first name? I don't know. But
Andrew Ryan. Jack was the son.
So, or was it his clone? So it was still very vague. But they had the same DNA. So that's why he could operate the bathysphere or whatever.
Right, but when you go back even one more generation, there is no way that DNA is going to be functional. There's no way. I mean, certainly not with 1960s technology, where they're going to say,
what
my grandfather could work that because I could. I mean, you're talking about generations of mutations in your DNA that I completely disagree that I don't think they're related.
I do. I think that in the rapture world, DeWitt had Anna. Anna might have given birth to Ryan. I mean,
no,
I think
that can't be it because the timeline.
I'm way off.
That can't be true.
Yeah.
Well, there's something connected.
So, Rapture was built.
Rapture, I need to get the timeline out.
Like 1942, oh. I think it was finished. There is no way that Andrew Ryan, who was himself in his 40s, there's no way that they're related. I just don't buy that. I mean, that's crazy. And then when I started doing the math too, it was weird that Booker would have had to have Anna when he was 19.
My mom had me when she was 20.
He's 38. In 1912. Yeah. He's 38 in 1912. She's 19.
So
he had to be 19 when he had his wife die.
Someone
which means
like a really
when you roll
diagram.
Back the time, he's like 16 at the Battle of Wounded Knee.
That's
a stretch.
No, that's not a stretch. I mean,
when you talk Civil War, they would have taken a 16-year-old. When you talk after the Civil War, which is when the Battle of Wounded Knee was, no, they're not taking teens. They'll take an 18- or 19-year-old, but that's the regular army at that point.
I'm not willing to, Kim, speak up. You've been in the military and probably know the history the most, but I have a feeling if you're 16 years old, I mean, even, don't you have to, you can get parents' consent.
Yeah, that wasn't exactly, they weren't checking birth certificates and stuff. I mean, that's not a stretch for me at all. I mean, I can believe that.
When they're going through the diorama about the Battle of Wounded Knee, and the colonel is talking about how absolutely vicious Booker was, to the point where he was scalping people because he liked it. I could not wrap my head around that was a 16-year-old doing that. Mm. It didn't feel right to me. I mean, I expected an adult.
Doesn't necessarily. There's a lot of things that happen in this game that don't feel right, but it's still. It's a very dark world that each one of these people, they're multifaceted and just, there's times where you just feel icky playing this game.
Yeah. Pretty much everybody was bad.
Not good people.
Exactly.
I wasn't really feeling, I mean, I felt bad for Elizabeth, bad.
Yeah, me too.
And then she flipped at the end when she was all vicious.
I read something interesting. Somebody's theory, like, because they keep doing this over and over again, and you're getting more and more Elizabeth. Is Elizabeth like building an Elizabeth army?
Yeah, right.
my gosh! Yeah, no kidding.
Well, that's an interesting question that ties in with the mother, because I was confused about that for a long time. But then she kept talking about maybe it was her wish fulfillment. You know, the fact that she had such anger towards her mother, I could see multiple dimensions of Elizabeth somehow coming together to generate what we saw as the mother. But that was an interesting side story too, right? And they didn't really spell it out, but the history was that because Comstock was sterile, he couldn't have a kid. So when he brought back the baby, they had to make up this story that, oh, the baby only survived 7 days in her womb. And I was completely confused by that. I was like, are you kidding me? Seven days? What? And then, of course, she flips out because it's not her kid. She wants nothing to do with it.
She thinks that it's the bastard daughter of Comstock and Lettice, which she's like,
right,
whatever.
Right. Lettice is like, I don't think so.
I have no interest in him.
Yeah. So then, of course, the mother goes just bananas, and he has to kill them. Comstock kills her,
and then
of course makes her a martyr. Yeah, to keep the secret, and of course kills Lettice as well. Both Lettices, which scatters them across the universe apparently. But then it also did the same essentially to the mother, right? Because she wasn't solidly dead. the fact that he could resurrect her.
Well, yeah, he as a used ghost? Elizabeth as the vehicle, the whatever they called it, to bring her back, and
right,
and basically brought her back in a twisted, warped way of Elizabeth's thoughts yes. of her. So
right,
and that fight at the yeah. final fight was on 1999 mode, ridiculously hard. You know how I got through
yeah.
it? I stayed in the back corner. And I know that there was an achievement for not using the dollar thing, but I was
oh,
like,
oh yes, yes.
I can't. I have to use this thing because
yeah, I can't.
I couldn't
that.
Keep enough ammo. So yes. I had my machine gun, and then I ended up just buying ammo and just killing everything. And I use yeah. My primary vigor was the electric shock. I used
oh, yes.
that constantly. Okay. And then I only upgraded it that one to the point where if you hit one, it ricochets off and hits another one.
Oh, sure.
So it would do a kind of a spread effect. And that would debilitate them and they wouldn't be able to move. So I'd shock them and shoot them. Shock them and shoot them.
Right.
And that's how I got through that game.
Yeah, that last fight was hard on normal Shit. Mode.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so it was really hard. I can't imagine in 1999 mode.
I have an amazing tip for you on the final battle, which is on the ship, Comstock yeah. ship. So there's a vigor called Return to Sender. And Ooh. All you need to do, and this is someone on Twitter told me this, I'm like, duh. All you need to do is put Return to Sender traps all around the core. No right. one will touch it. It's oh. I had like 80% on 1990.
I never used that.
Yes, yeah. I know.
Oh my god.
And it
that
will,
is brilliant.
Brilliant.
Yeah, that's totally brilliant.
So I just
I did return remember center around reading it. That the people designing the game when they first let people test it, that they found that what you said is exactly what people did, and it's what I did too. They stuck with one vigor, mm-hmm. they stuck with one or two guns, and they just played the whole way through. So then that's when they went in to tweak the 1999 mode to kind of make you more aware, use these other vigors because they're going to be more effective.
Yeah.
Like I would never, I was so stupid. I never used the possession on the stupid automatons, uh-huh. the automated George Washington's that came after you and the Abraham Lincoln's. I never used
they
them.
And
I wasted so much ammo yeah. just shooting them down. I'm like, I'm so stupid.
But I will say, yeah. though, that the possession.
That one was one of my favorites in the 1999 mode is the possession. Because it also, it allows you, if you always have one person still alive, it allows you, no more will come until you get mm-hmm. that last guy down. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. So that's one of
did
the strategies
you, did
that I
use.
You
ever notice that when you possessed not a machine but a human, they would beat themselves in the head with their gun?
Yeah, I felt so bad watching these people commit suicide. I'm like, oh, I just caused that dude to kill himself. That's like
he's like standing. He's like, ugh, ugh. I was like, oh no.
So were you guys sad at the end when
I was terribly sad?
Yeah.
Terribly. See, I was sad, but then I started thinking, I'm like, he's not a good guy.
No,
either reality, mm-hmm. any reality, he is not a good guy. So that really kind of made me feel a little less sad. I mean, I was sad, but not as sad. When I really started thinking, as Comstock, he was an asshole. As Booker,
yeah.
he was just kind of lost
sad.
Man yeah and he was not a good guy at all, so I didn't feel as sad when I really started thinking about both of the characters. Neither of them are good people.
No.
did you watch it the whole way through the credits to see the ending
scene? Yeah
Anna?
So yeah right The first time that I saw the ending, I remember just overwhelmingly wishing that he had said this one line when he's faced in the river with all the different Elizabeths. I wanted him to at some point say, in all of those different versions, were we ever happy?
Aww.
Because that's the feeling that I had
yeah.
at the end. I was
yeah.
like, you know... all they really deserve is to just a chance to start over and be happy.
Instead but of I don't this think tragic that's possible. I really
chain
don't.
Reaction.
But now it is. There's if infinite if you number look of possibilities. At
the end, it is.
Yeah.
Because if you watch the end and he says Anna, that means Elizabeth never exists. Sure, the city may still exist. I mean, Letice is still out there. She may still build a city, but Comstock's not there. Elizabeth's not there. They have the chance now. Yeah. They have the chance to be happy. But when she was showing him all these different worlds, that was like the overwhelming thing was, in any of these, were they ever happy? Yeah. Did they ever get the chance to just, you know, not go through this tragedy that they waited through?
Speaking of emotion, there was there's a scene in Shantytown right outside the bar. And it's when you phase into the time that DeWitt becomes basically a martyr to the cause, the Vox cause.
Oh, right.
And you go back to the bar, and there's a handyman lying dead in front of the bar, and there's a bunch of guys getting pitchers, and they're, you know, joking around, or like, oh, be sad, and, you know, just not being respectful at all. And if you go around to the front, there's a voxophone, and you pick that up. And I would encourage, if you haven't, because I listened to it the first time through, and I kind of picked it up and I moved on, and I didn't stick around. I didn't kind of connect what was happening. But the handyman was holding a voxophone of his wife's last words to him. And at the very end, if you just look at the handyman and listen to that, I was almost in tears, because she's like, I love you. I love you. I love you. And he was holding on to it. Because, I mean, those handymen were men. And in that case, it was a man that worked in the tower that was keeping Elizabeth. And through the radiation or whatever, he was going to die. And so Fink was like, well, I can save him, and I can turn him into this handyman thing. And it just broke. Even talking
those
about
were
it,
tragic.
Broke my heart. Oh my god.
Yeah, I hated seeing them, because they were. I mean, even the very first time that you see one when they're up on display, I was like, that is horrible, and I don't like this at all.
Yeah.
I mean, there was so much ugliness.
So, by the way,
beautiful city.
In the BioShock Wikipedia, there's a whole wiki for BioShock, and it says the history of Booker DeWitt. He was born April 19th, 1874, and at the age of 16, he was part of the 7th Calgary Regiment of the United States, and was present at the Battle of Wounded Knee. Due to his gruesome actions in battle, other members of his regiment gave him the nickname the White Engine. So he was 16, and he was in that. So,
but, I mean, that's just going from the game. That's just putting the information from what's in the game into the wiki. That isn't necessarily...
What would you say then? I mean, how would you piece it all together?
But I mean, that's exactly what I deduced from the game. Okay, when I look and I see the dates, he must have been 16. But to me, that
doesn't
ring true.
It doesn't add up for you in this time frame. I mean, you wouldn't see a 16-year-old in today's day and age in a horrible battle like that. But we can't, I mean, honestly say what it was like in 1874, but
out west, I could totally see that, you know.
I mean,
so he was born in 74, but it was 16 years later that he was part of the Battle of Wounded Knee.
Right.
Then he was also part of the Pinkertons, which would have been 20-ish, but he gave up Anna at the age of 19.
So, it says between 1891 and 1892, Booker was married, and by 1892, he was 18, and his wife had become pregnant with their child. I mean, in that time period, too, people got married. People didn't live long, so they started getting together way earlier than they do nowadays. So I could see this totally being plausible. All right. Let's move on.
I just have issues with it. It's just personal thing for me. But it just seems if they would have just said, "Hey, he was 25 when he gave her up," I'd be all right. You know,
but that's,
whatever,
I mean,
and make him a little older. It's just as a teen, that just feels weird.
It does.
I had my kid when I was 20. Right. So this does not seem that weird.
That's 20 is way far from 16 and 19, don't you think? I mean,
not in that time.
He had his kid when he was 19. I mean, he gave her up when he was a baby.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's oh, wow. We went way longer than we thought. I feel like we've gotten out a lot of what we wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
True. Amazing game. Oh, my gosh. And, you know, I know people are praising it, and if you are the type of person that kind of goes against the grain of, well, if everybody loves it, I know I'm going to hate it, try not to. Try to give it a chance. there's some really good articles. In fact, Kim, you had tweeted about an article talking about why game critics are trying to poo-poo this game, and I just was like, wow, you know, I can't.
Well,
I mean,
did you
read the... It's good to want to better games, and I think this game, no game is ever perfect. That's why you always kind of, you look to improve, but this is a really wonderful game. So what were you going to say, Kim?
Did you read the article that it was a rebuttal of as well? Because that was the article that it was the critical article, and it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, basically the guy was saying that first person shooters can never be art.
Ugh.
And it was trying to act intelligent, but it fell very short of being an intelligent game. And I'm like, how can you even say that? I mean, he was nitpicking every little detail that it just got ridiculous. So I was like, no way. This guy... and I actually know that guy personally who wrote the first article, and I was just shocked. I'm like, I can't believe you would go this far to criticize a game that's this good. You know, why can't you enjoy it?
Well, I think some people just like to be the dissenting opinion. So if everybody's loving something, it's like, well, I'm not going to be on that bandwagon and enjoy that.
We were talking before the recording about this, and I recall when Avatar, the movie, was out, and everyone was raving like it was the second coming. Oh my God, this is the best movie ever. I can't believe it. And I deliberately did not go see that movie. I was like, if every single person loves this movie, I am not going to go see it because F you. I'm not going to see it. I mean, I
you're part of the problem, Stephanie.
Seeing it for at least a year. No, because... Everyone, they build it up so high that how could it possibly live up to these expectations? It can't. If you just tell me, hey, this is a good movie, you should go see
it.
Have
you ever seen
it? Okay, I'll check
it
out.
Have you seen
it? Oh my God, this is the best movie ever. I wish I lived there. Oh my God, it was so fantastic. It's not. It's never going to be that good. And it wasn't, I mean, in my opinion. It was okay, but it wasn't fantastic. So I can get that some people get bristly when you tell them, this is... best game I've ever played. Oh my God. And they'll immediately get defensive and say, well, how can it possibly be that good? You're just saying it. So I get that, but I think he wrote it to be a troll, to just be that dissenting opinion that, oh, it's not good. You guys don't know what you're talking about.
There was one article, and I'll put the articles that Kim had tweeted on this post in the show notes that I thought was really well said. There was the cracked article that you had talked about or had tweeted.
Which I was like, cracked?
Yeah.
Am I supposed to
take
this seriously? Yeah. But it was a good article.
It was a really good article.
Yeah. They have fantastic writers, especially when it comes to gaming.
And great article from Cracked.
And when you kind of look at our culture being gamers, I think we try to hold certain games up to the non-gamers and be like, here. this is why we like what we like.
Yes.
And I think we're trying to, in some cases, justify why we do this. So if we can kind of serve up one of these games that transcends, you know, your Call of Duties or, you know, your just general mindless kind of things, we want to be legitimized, and it's just unfortunate. It's this game was made for people that enjoy games, not necessarily people that don't game. Though I did tell my dad, I said, you know, because he's always enjoyed games, but he he's having, as he's getting older, he's having trouble with like the controller and things like that. I'm like, Dad, you would actually be a perfect person to go on like Twitch TV or something like that and just watch somebody play this, because it's an amazing story. And it's a shame that he can't experience it, because he's not necessarily, he can't use the controls. So for that, for those types of things where I wish more people could experience the storyline and experience what we were talking about, because it's more, I don't know, involved. It feels more involved in a movie, because we've been building this up for many, many years with 1, 2, and 3. And it just feels, and I think that's the key. We're feeling, we're connecting, we're being a part of it. And I think that's why people that really like this game really kind of find attachment to it. So,
Yep.
All right. Yeah. 45 minutes in, 46 minutes in. We hope you enjoyed this special spoiler edition of Ladies of Leap.
Spoilers.
Spoilers. We're just going to have Stephanie say spoiler, spoiler, spoiler. So you can't give us any crap if you listen to this.
That's right.
I'm going to put in the title, spoiler. All right. So thanks again, and we will talk with you soon.
Bye, guys. Thanks.
Visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.